Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Luke's here at the Crossroads, and I'd like to welcome my guest from Canada. Welcome, Yves Podvin.
Hi, Ernest, how are you?
No worries, I'm fine. How's the weather in Canada?
Well, we're shoveling it. It's snow. We had a Saturday, we had about let's say close to a foot of snow.
Okay, that's pretty good.
So that's but you know what? We're lucky here that it's not in Ontario. It's kind of the warmer part of Canada, and the ones that get it is the East Coast. And Newfoundland had 20 to 25 feet of snow. It covered the houses. So so here we're lucky. We only got a foot.
That's
You can shovel
absolutely.
that in no time.
Yeah, that's absolutely colossal when you think of
Colossal.
the extremes of weather,
Unbelievable.
25 foot of snow, and in Australia we're just tipping over the midsummer. Midsummer would have been around, say, the middle of January, and we're just past that. And we had an inch of rain yesterday, an inch where we live, and that was beautiful. So that means that the fires are basically out in Australia. Even though the weather at times was up and down, the drought was there, certainly there, but Australia always has drought somewhere, and the fires appear to be out. So it's certainly a change in what's actually going on, what's transpiring from fire to rain. The Dorothy McKellar, My Country, she wrote a poem, and I love a sunburnt country. This is actually, I think it's the second verse. A land of sweeping plains, of rugged mountain ranges, of droughts and flooding rains. And I think it's in verse 5 she touches on fire as being very much a part of what happens in Australia, especially in the bush, in the wilderness. We've got methods of controlling it, but the fact is that our government, who administers the policy, administers the law, in order to do these cold weather burns, doesn't achieve anything like what it's supposed to do. And we've had multiple royal commissions. In fact, I think 2009 we had 173 people perished in the bushfires that year, and the royal commission made recommendations, and the government does not implement them. So the government, conservative, predominantly conservative, but also socialist government, neither implement them. And so when it comes time to review the situation, and obviously we will because of the fires, then they impose more and more totalitarianism on us. And this, to me, is part of our title for today. And that is Agenda 2030 versus Douglas Social Credit. Agenda 2030 being essentially a United Nations policy to impose more and more totalitarianism on the world. And I'm going to just cut across to our websites here, and show our viewers. In our library, if you look under the Club of Rome, so under this column here, Club of Rome, we've got two documents, and the first being the First Global Revolution, and it goes back 184 pages. It goes back about 50 or so plus years. And then, with their intention, they actually laid out a blueprint for the now the climate emergency, what they refer to as a climate emergency. And the fact is that this is an outworking of a world government policy. It is totalitarianism. Now, I want to touch on one more thing, and that is this Douglas book, Credit Power and No Democracy. Credit power, the power to create credit. So credit power and democracy. And in this preface, Douglas writes, "Man does not live by bread alone, but without a reasonable amount of food, clothes, and shelter, his activities on this planet are both circumscribed in extent and unduly limited in duration. In what is undoubtedly an attack on certain features of the so-called capitalistic system, in this book, no attempt or desire to judge that system on any grounds but those of workability is made or implied. The business of an economic system is to deliver the right goods to the right users, and the private financing of public production is doomed, the private financing. In other words, Douglas is saying that banks create their own credit and those banks are private institutions. The private financing of public production is doomed because it is failing singly in delivering the goods. That is moral which works. That is moral which works best. C.H. Douglas. Now, credit, power and democracy. This goes back to the 1920-1921 time. It was his, I believe it was his second book. I could be mistaken on that. But the first book being in 1920 called Economic Democracy. Douglas was writing about it. Economic democracy. Democratizing the economy. It really is a concept that is foreign to our thinking, but it is what Douglas actually advocated. Agenda 2030 being world government or the economy being democratized. Your thoughts, Eve?
Yeah, it is funny that when you go out in the public, you go out to talk to people. When I do some apostolate work or I go talk to business, and I mention things like you just mentioned, people automatically say, that's right, you know, that, yeah, I believe that. That's got to be, it's wrong, you know, and this and that. Everybody has different words about it, but everybody kind of maybe back themselves up on the morals that they have, and they say, this is wrong. This is... it's true what you're saying, you know. So I don't talk to too many people that say, oh, get out of here, you know. There are some. There are some. There's nothing you can do about it. Just follow the rules and, you know, you get the odd one that say that. But most of them will bow down to, yes, it is a tyranny. It is a totalitarian regime, if you want to call it that way. Everybody hates our prime minister. So everybody hates the teachers are on strike right now. So they're complaining about that, of course. Well, I would complain too. And then you forgive the teachers because they're after something that they need to have too. So the whole thing is becomes kind of a confusing subject. But if we put into one solution, if you mention social credit, what is social credit? So they're hoping maybe for that hope in the world, you know, like, so there is a solution, you know, but you'll never achieve it. I don't care. We're still promoting social credit. Douglas is social credit because we don't want to end up like in the Agenda 2030, even though the elites are pushing that on us. We don't want to end up with that. It's totalitarian, it's communism, it's Marxism. And the basic moral of people that I talk to, most people, is, yeah, that's true. You know, like, well, why do I do this? Why do I end up with the debts? Why do we have this? So everybody's asking the question, and they're wondering, you know, what can be done about it. So we mentioned the solution of social credit, and they say, oh, that's interesting, but you'll never achieve it. But still, we keep on pushing it. We keep on, you know, like, maybe people will, you know, somebody might come up and say, geez, you know, that's interesting, I'm going to follow up on that. Can I go to your meeting or something? That's one person. So you get one person to follow up on that, and then they maybe they do their own little thing on their side. So you never know what can happen.
That's all right. That's exactly right. I want to just actually explore a couple of other concepts, even. I'm just going to cut across to another website, and that's this one here. This is Wikipedia. And it gives you a history of the separation of church and state. And I know that King Henry VIII claimed the church as under his domain, as a, if you like, a monarchical dictator. He claimed the church. And so the church was emasculated. Around that time, certainly in England, it was an organ of the state. And the thing is that the outworking of that, in my view, was that they lost their locus standi, they lost their right to speak because they were an organ of the state, and so they no longer spoke on ethical or moral grounds. Now, the existing, if you like, system, the moral anchor for politics, the moral anchor for economics, the moral anchor for finance is lost. And we are essentially cast adrift. Liberal democracy, libertarianism, laissez-faire, has no moral anchor. In actual fact, in the publications that I've seen, one actually discusses the justification for agreed slavery. If people can become so impoverished by the financial economic system, so impoverished, it is rational and reasonable that they can prostitute themselves, that they can sell themselves into slavery in order to receive food, a sufficiency of food in order to live. And it is a brutalizing of the individual, absolutely brutalizing. Now, what has Agenda 2030 got to do with it? It's, to me, it's the same policy. Where you have laissez-faire or libertarianism or liberal democracy on one side of a coin, the other side of that same coin is communism or socialist or Marxism. It's the same dialectical materialism philosophy, and there is no moral anchor because the man is only matter in motion, and moralism or anything like that is of no concern. And this is how we can justify doing all sorts of atrocities on the basis of the survival of the fittest, if you like, Darwinism. It really is a hideous perspective on life. Agenda 2030 is part of this picture because what it does is it places power in the hands of so few, and those few just happen to be the same elites who are existing at the top of the financial tree, the top of the economic tree. These same elites influence governments, influence bodies like the United Nations. Your thoughts, Eve?
Yeah, the United Nations. A lot of people trust that body, that entity. They say, "Oh, the United Nations, that's our hope." But you know what? The United Nations, to me, is a group of people that are financed by elites. And they are given a Agenda 2030, let's say, and to f this is what we're going to do, and you better do it the way that we tell you, or we're going to take your power away or your whatever you have. So basically, the Agenda 2030 is so well financed by the elites, and when I'm talking about elites, I'm talking about the money power, which has no limit. They have no limit. They create money at will, so therefore they'll pay the money at will to people that they need in their plan to achieve one world government, Agenda 2030, one world religion, and they will finance these people because to them the money is nothing. It's just something that they create for themselves. Since they have the power over it, they can do whatever they want. And I'm surprised that people really don't ask themselves, is this true that what you're saying there? You're mentioning that they create money at will to finance the evil of this world because they want to achieve communism, Agenda 2030, you can call it that way. Agenda 2030 is only a recipe that they're giving to each country, and they're given social credit points points. Each country has a way of gaining this status of, oh, I'm, you know, we're in Canada, we the Agenda 2030, we follow it to the T, and we're going to get rewarded for this. Mm-hmm. So it's a total shamble. It's a big hoax. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it won't work for them, but this is the way that it is.
Yeah,
this I'm is gonna, the way that.
That's right. I'm going to cut across to our website again, Eve, because there's a document I want to highlight to our readers, our viewers, and that is this Whittaker Chambers. Whittaker Chambers wrote Witness, and the book, of course, is about the establishment of the United Nations. He witnessed against Alger Hiss. Alger Hiss was the American communist, deeply immersed within the American administration, who was responsible for establishing the United Nations. And this, to me, is most important. Whittaker Chambers wrote Letter to My Children. Here it is here. You can click on it and bring the letter up. 1952, he wrote it. It's a beautiful letter, and he explains how he changed from being a communist to being a Christian. And in it, what he saw was the ear of his child. I think it was a daughter. And he saw the ear, and there was this child, and so beautifully created. And he looked at her ear, and he marveled at it and thought, this isn't random, this isn't chance, there is design. And so he changed his philosophy. He was deeply immersed himself within the communist spy network in America, and he chose to move himself out of it, and he became state witness against Alger Hiss, the communist agent responsible for establishing the United Nations. Now, you've got to understand that the American administration was instrumental in establishing the United Nations. This is the nexus, this is the coming together of laissez-faire capitalism and communism. They're both revolutionary, they're both totalitarian, and the loss of any moral anchor on government, on finance, on economics, on industry, the loss of any sort of spiritual dimension to man is because of this separation of church and state, which goes back to the 1905, I believe it was, where the courts were then determining that the church and state are separate entities, and the church was not to have any moral anchor on the effects, the actual outworking of the state. And that, to me, is the most profound step away from good governance. It was a step towards totalitarianism, and we've continued to make those steps ever since, that governments can do things, and they continue to impose to the point where all governments are totalitarian, whether it's Canadian, Australian, American, Chinese, Russian, Venezuelan, whatever, South African, Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, whatever. These are all totalitarian governments. And I might add that even theocracies or dictatorial monarchies are also totalitarian. They are, by their very nature, absolute rulers, and of course the Western culture is one where the seeds of democracy or representative government have been extracted from the with great resistance from these dictators. King John, Magna Carta, that was not an easy fight, and that fight went on over 200 years to get the rights, the common law rights, written into the Constitution of England. And so we've got to really recognize that this Agenda 2030 is not new. World government, totalitarian power is not new. It's always been there, but it has to be actively resisted. Eve.
It's funny that at my last meeting, I had two videos that I showed. I think I mentioned it to you. It was back in December. Mm-hmm. And I showed the Agenda 2030 plan, and they showed the film by Bill Gates, mm-hmm. who's answering question about Agenda 2030, and it is amazing that people can be, you know, clouded over at the front, and they cannot see nothing. It gets a big smile. Oh, okay, okay. Mm-hmm. This is what you're going to do in the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, if we look at the past history of the Michael Journal, the social credit movements, we have established a thinking in society. Okay, even if it's just the income tax, when you talk about the income tax. So we've established a thought in the society that it is wrong. Oh yeah, I remember it was only for the war, you know. So maybe they don't want to talk about it, but they know that there's something wrong in our elites, in our governments, in our they talk against the government all the time. Yet every 4 years they'll go and put their ballot in the box, and they're not thinking any further. What am I doing, you know? Uh-huh. And I was talking to a lady yesterday that she says she's never voted, uh-huh. and she has three kids, a husband, and she works, and she exactly like I mentioned, yeah. You know, like I've been working, my husband and I work, you know, we have to pay for our mortgage, and we don't have enough money every month. We run out of money, you know, we just can't do it. They're both working. Uh-huh. And if you talk to a banker or a financial advisor, you're living beyond your means. Uh-huh. That's what you're doing. You're living beyond your means. That makes me so upset that I feel like just, you know, slapping him in the face to wake up, you know. Uh-huh. This is wrong what you're saying. Uh-huh. So it's a question of economy. A lot of things are a question of economy because, well, people are driven by money. Uh-huh. They'll do anything for money. Uh-huh. So both parents have to work because they have to. They want to bring up their family. They want a nice home. They want, you know, take a vacation with the kids. And I don't blame them. They want to have a good family, and sometimes it doesn't work and it just falls apart, yeah. because they were set up to fail,
yeah.
right from the start. And out of that, we have the people that work, and then we'd have the people that don't work. And it doesn't mean that they don't work, that they're stupid or lazy or anything like that. They'll find a way of getting money. Mm-hmm. So maybe they don't work for a firm or something like that. But they'll find a way of getting money somehow. It may be wrong in a lot of ways, but you know they've been set up to fail.
Yeah.
And this is the way society, not society, I shouldn't say society, I would say certain elites are setting us up to fail.
Yeah.
And these are the ones that we have to make sure that the population knows about these elites. That's what they're trying to do. I don't want to generalize the government. I don't want to generalize a group, but the elites, I will specify the financiers, the bankers are the ones that are creating these problems, mm-hmm. because they're controlling your life with the money. We have to deal with them through money. And we have to listen to them. If we don't listen to them, you'll go bankrupt, you'll lose your home, you'll lose your kids, you'll lose whatever. So we are stuck in this this system because we were set up to fail to start with.
Yeah, now that's a very, very
important. You don't want to give us a break.
No, very, very important observation, Eve, and that is that the financial system is actually a confiscatory system. It progressively indebts individuals and nations, and in the end all nations are bankrupt. I've shown the debt clock so many times. The debt clock never goes backwards. It always doesn't matter how much we produce, it doesn't matter how much we actually manufacturing, infrastructure, all the sorts of building up of our real assets, doesn't matter what we do, our level of indebtedness increases, and it is actually the system. The system is designed to be confiscatory. And so the people who manipulate the system for their own advantage, yes, it is, to me, it's quite apparent. Agenda 2030 is a consequence, is an outworking of the manipulation of the system. It's to impoverish the whole world, when in actual physical reality, we have a world of abundance. We have a world of plenty, but the financial system doesn't reflect that. Douglass advocated and produced the book Economic Democracy, democratizing the economic system. And in that, of course, came the national dividend consumer price discount to place finance at the feet of the individual, a position of service instead of a position of dominance. It really, really is as straightforward as that. And it's a narrative that needs to be understood and looked at in detail, because the debts are not getting less. The country's going into essentially like receivership, into confiscation of assets. I mean, you know, I look at Australia at the moment now, the imposition of Agenda 2030 on Australia coming at us like a steam train. The administration of our forests is done by predominantly conservative governments. It's a communist policy. There's no question about it. It's definitely coming from the Agenda 2030, the actual setting the parks aside, letting them go increase their fuel load, and then when the firestorms come through, it's actually the administration by conservative governments of a totalitarian policy. And the outworking of that, when we have the fires, is an imposition of further totalitarianism. It's the yin-yang of dialectical materialism. The administration being supposedly conservative, nothing like it, and the policy itself being revolutionary Marxist in its origins. It's the same policy, just the different faces of the same policy. So we really do need to come to grips with it. The way to move away from totalitarianism is to democratize the economic system. Douglass designed it with that thought in mind, and the thought is one of increased freedom and security. We're not seeing that in any country in the world. There is no, and yet we have this automation, we have robotics, we have rapid, massive industrialization, especially in countries such as Korea and China. Massive industrialization. And yet those people are not experiencing any significant improvement in their material wealth. China is producing everything for Australia, for America, for most of the West. And it's madness when we're shutting down our own industry. We could produce it for ourselves, but the financial system is geared in such a fashion to be confiscatory. All we get are the debts. And yet it's the raw materials, the technology, the natural assets which belong to the community are all being confiscated under Agenda 2030, under this world hegemony, run and administered and directed by the elites. Whether they're communist or capitalist, they're still the elites, and they're actually the same people. We're at the nearly 29 minute mark, Eve. We've only just scratched the surface on this, but I'm going to call for a summary and closing comments from you, Eve.
Okay, we have we have all kinds of technology, we have all kinds of science. But you know, the first rule of communism is we got to get rid of God. That's the first rule of Marxism.
Yeah.
Get rid of God. That's the first thing you got to get rid of. Now, this saying that I've known for many years, technology, science, without the love of God and your neighbor, will lead to ignorance. And this is what we have today, is the ignorance of everything.
Yeah.
It leads to nothing. And that's why we have to get our grips on a better world, which cannot be done without God himself.
Yeah.
And only then can we achieve social credit, It's going to have to be that, or we're going to have to go with the other guy called Satan.
No worries. Thank you for that, Eve. I'm just going to give a quick diagrammatical summary of where my thinking is on this consideration of the separation of church and state. This is the symbol here, the triquetra in the top row in particular, and it shows three branches. This circle that's here shows unity and diversity, and I think it's a very, very important symbol, unity in diversity. And that means that if you've got government, and the government is of the people, it's not by the people, it's actually government by the elites. And what's actually sadly missing out of that government and the people, it's actually the church. It's the moral anchor, or if you like, the natural law. The natural law is missing from the consideration of government and the people. And the natural law, of course, is what works best. We're not seeing what's working best, certainly not for the individuals of the world. What we're seeing is totalitarianism, and it's a mutated, monotheistic, if you like, perspective on life. It's one of power, and that's all. And unfortunately, we've moved away from a balanced relationship. Australia's constitution was written from a Trinitarian perspective of division of power and balance and separation of houses, the houses of parliament, the Senate, the houses of representative, and of course the Governor General, a separation of power. And what we're seeing is we're seeing this totalitarianism in more and more forms, where we're losing sight of the influence of the Governor General in Australia, and certainly the Senate is being emasculated by the party system. So it really, really is important that we bring these things back into equilibrium. We can't do that without placing a moral anchor, returning the church to have some influence over the state, so that the church, the people, and the state can be in equilibrium. This is a very, very important concept. Eve Botvey, thank you so much for today. I really enjoy our forums.
I thank you, Ernest.
No worries. Cheers then. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen.